someone can slap you and you slap them back and think that after slapping that person is going to bring peace. No. It's just going to inflame and make that fight even bigger. Because the next time the person see you, they're probably coming with a knife. And if they slice you and you slice them back, the next time they'll be coming with a gun.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world. Produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service. Lema Bowie is the author of a book titled Mighty Be Our Powers. Since the book came out, the might of her powers was acknowledged with a Nobel Prize shared with Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and Tawakkol Karman. Lema brought Liberian women together to end that country's 14-year civil war. Films of the women's bold and desperate actions are part of the documentary Pray the Devil Back to Hell, part of a U.S. public television series, Women, War, and Peace. In the last film of the series, Lema is seen rallying women from many African countries to help each other press for peace negotiations. Shortly before the Nobel Prize announcement, Lema Bowie was in the U.S. She gave an interview to Janie Reasner, host of Women's Voices on KZYX-FM.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate your taking time to do this, Lema.
No problem.
May I ask, why are you here?
Actually, on book tour.
Mighty Be Our Powers, How Sisterhood, Prayer, and Sex Changed a Nation at War, right?
Yeah,
and it looks wonderful. The first question I ask my guests, because this is Women's Voices, is what part did your mother or perhaps your grandmother play in your life to help you in your becoming the woman that you are today?
Well, usually what I say to people is that my 101 feminism came from my grandmother. Uh-huh. And then if there's anything called the 202 feminism, that was from my mother. I'm from a family that has a very strong matriarchal lineage. The women in my family are very, very strong. And as a matter of fact, the region of Liberia that I come from, the women in that region, are not just they say, but that's what I have seen as I've been growing up. The women are the breadwinners. They are the strong ones in that region, like most of the regions in Liberia. So that's the lineage I come from. But the other thing is that most African families can boast of having brothers who fought for them or who was around for them. We grew up in a family of all girls, five girls. Huh. My mother never had a son. So we were taught to do things like any boy in a community would do.
Wow. Well, that's certainly a work to your advantage.
Well, yes.
You know, there's many questions I want to ask, but I saw the movie Pray the Devil Back to Hell, which is so, so powerful. And your vision and your strength and daring to carry it out is so appealing to all of us. And, of course, it worked. And many women in this country, we don't see women in this country doing things like that. It just doesn't happen.
Well, I think it does. But like our movement would not have gotten the kind of recognition it has gotten if we had not been fortunate for the makers of the documentary to have gone to Liberia at the time, heard the story and decided this was a story worthy of media's attention. Uh-huh. So it's on that basis that I think it's something that people are doing every day. The one thing I tell people when they say, oh, how can we do this? How can we do that? The first question I ask is, how are people, if you look around, you have a lot of inner cities here in the U.S., and it's not a 0% success rate of children in those communities, especially with single mothers. It's not all of them that go to prison. What you see in some of those communities are some children who grow up in those inner cities without any crime record, and they go word and become good corporate executives, just like any other person who grew up in a very successful, rich neighborhood. The problem the world has is that those are not the kind of stories that are exotic to the press. What is sexy to the press is the stories of crime, death, and all of the different negative life drama. I think if people were taking up time to showcase successful single mothers who have brought up successful children into the media limelight, you will know that in different communities, they have strong women as one, too.
Mm-hmm.
You have serious problems with drugs in some of these communities. In one community in Philadelphia, I heard when the women, I haven't met them, but there are plans on the way for us to meet. But these women have, after they watched the film Pray the Devil Back to Hell, they've gathered Mother Against Gun Violence or something like that, formed themselves, and they've been working over the last 2 years. And I think as part of their advocacy campaign, they've been able to shut down one or two businesses that sell guns in their communities. These are very good stories, but the problem is, how do we get them to be shown in the limelight, mm-hmm. like Pray the Devil Back to Hell? And I don't want to say women are not doing anything in this country. In different communities, in different parts, women are doing things. My other disappointment is when it comes to the international, America's policy on all of the different things. Granted that you've had problems with terrorism, which is very unfortunate, but I know that war and violence have never solved any problem, and I'm speaking from the perspective of a peace activist and someone who survived war. So I think sometimes I feel a bit disappointed is that a rallying call, a national call from women in America to this administration and to any other incoming administration that will no longer tolerate our sons going to war. In other countries, in the name of peace, because violence begets violence. There's no way you can slap someone. Someone can slap you, and you slap them back, and think that after slapping that person is going to bring peace. No. It's just going to inflame and make that fight even bigger. Because the next time the person sees you, they probably come in with a knife. And if they slice you and you slice them back, the next time they'll be coming with a gun. So never has violence solved any problem. So that's my disappointment at the national level, a rallying call for some of the global issues of peace.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's really what I was referring to, because of course I know there are women, everyday lives of women are courageous and they work under intolerable circumstances to support their children. But, you know, we see the decimation of the world, of the earth, of air and water and animals and all of us. And the guys at the top, life does not seem to have any meaning. It's clear that women are the answer for this. Return of the sacred feminine, which is what my life is about, must happen. In fact, I believe it is happening, but we all have to play a part in that and make that happen. I was speaking with Starhawk not too long ago on the radio, and I said, what can we do to make the shift? She said, well, we all know what to do in terms of permaculture, what to do to really heal the earth and life and bring it back. But the guys in power we can't seem to find a path to really make that happen. Do we all march in the streets?
I think the problem is, over time, globally, women have come to accept our socialization, the way the world has taught us to believe that politics is not our issue. Politics is a man issue. So we sit on the fringes of politics and look at these men, in most instances, destroy our communities, destroy our world, and we say to ourselves, this is not my issue. This is not what I should be involved with. This is not my business. This is not, and we just go on and on and on and on. If you look at the world population, women make half of the world's population. How many women ministers and presidents do we see?
Right.
It's because we believe that our role is to give our support to the men and be in the back. But I think until we start socializing the younger generation to believe that the only way we can have a functional world is if the two that God created in this world, men and women play very important roles in every aspect. So from the home to the community to the national, global, men being involved in the home, women being involved in the community decision-making, men and women being involved on the national stage, men and women being involved on the global stage. Because one side of the brain, if it's functioning, is not a functional body. If the two sides of the brain are functioning, that is a functional body. So the reason why we're seeing all of this is because our world is operating literally on one side of its brain. Predominantly, the men are the ones making the national and global decisions. It's time for us to step into this space. It's not enough for us to keep complaining that they're not getting us involved. We need to start creating our own spaces. We need to start voting for ourselves. We need to start making our voices loud. And that's the reason why programs like your program is very important. But then also, how many men listen to your program? As a matter of fact, how many women will be listening to your program? If you do a survey of the Colbert Report or Jon Stewart Tonight Show, mm-hmm. you see also that a lot of women sit and listen to those programs also. How are you also charting out a course for yourself? So I think the answer to the world is not everyone getting into the streets, but everyone playing a role from the home to the local to the national, in politics, in everything. Gone are the days where we just vote for men. Now is the time for us to put ourselves into the space and get voted for.
A woman. Yes, yes. Finding that path is not easy, but knowing that you have a right to do it and an obligation to do it, to awaken to that as a woman, is very, very important. This is the moment, you know, this really is the moment, especially, I believe, for elder women, for mothers, to claim the world for their own and for their children.
Hmm. Yeah.
It was in the movie, Pray the Devil Back to Hell. You saw what was happening. I'm not clear on all the sequences in your life, but I believe you were already trained as a trauma counselor. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then you had children, and there was domestic violence. Is this true?
Oh, yes. But the sequence of it was that I left that violent relationship, moved back to Liberia, and stayed in the house with my family, and was able to, at some point, start doing some work. And yes, I had this real strange dream and it was like someone saying, you need to bring the women together to pray for peace. I felt like, there's something definitely wrong with this dream. I am not the real candidate to be carrying this message of peace, because at that time, I had all of the wrong reasons or all the right reasons for not getting involved. I wasn't married. I was in a relationship that I wasn't married to the person, and blah, blah, blah. All of the things that our socialization teaches us, that, like I was speaking about earlier, that keeps us out of any well-meaning political space, was those issues that I was dwelling on. But I had a boss who said to me, the dream bearer is the dream carrier. So you have to. And we held hands that morning and prayed, and that was the beginning of my personal journey into something I had no idea about, called peace activism.
Wow. Well, it certainly caught on.
It did. It really did. Until today, it's still something that is really, really still doing great, not just for Liberians, but for women in other parts of Africa who have gone through conflict. They see that as an inspiration and a reason for them to get up and take stands for their communities.
Yes, yes.
On Wings, you're listening to Nobel Peace Laureate Lema Bowie, interviewed by Janie Reisner.
Yes. And the fact that you were able to at the gathering at the palace to keep the men there until they agreed to peace with Charles Taylor inside was the most extraordinary event. They could have killed you, couldn't they?
Well, we met with Taylor, and then we left and went to Ghana for the peace talks. And then it was in Ghana that we had the confrontation with the men in the hall. And the men in the hall were, some of them were comrades of Taylor, but he as an individual was not in the hall at the time we seized the hall.
I see.
Whether I could have been killed during those days of protest, I never really dwelled on it. Because the thing is, our life and our lives as women and children, our children's lives have been degenerated to a place where we really didn't know tomorrow wasn't certain. Yes, okay, tomorrow is not certain for anyone, but ours was blatantly staring us in the face every day in the form of overdrug child soldiers. Mm. And it was like, you're not guaranteed in next minute, you know. Every morning you woke up, you told God, thank you. You're going to bed. You went to bed with a heavy heart. You woke up with a heavy heart. That was no life to live. So it was almost like a living dead group of people. You could not plan for tomorrow. You could not plan for future. You could not plan for 6 months later. So even if your roof was leaking, you would just leave it and the water would run on you and your family every night because nothing was certain. That was not life. So it never once crossed our minds as we did our protest that, oh, we could be killed or we could be beaten or we could be in prison. Because there's something about oppression that when you've gone through it for so long and when that thing snaps, you have no care about any kind of physical condition. So sometimes I'm sure people tend to wonder, this activist, someone like Mandela, 27 years in prison, what was going through his mind? Nothing but freedom. And I do not want to even try to compare what we did with what Mandela did for South Africa. But I think if you think of a group of people who are going through oppression, suppression, and pain, you realize that I've gone through it. When that thing snaps, you are prepared to go for how many whatever years in torture, in suffering, in protest, as long as you are looking at an end of that suffering at some point in time. So, for example, you can find people doing hunger strike, and you have a whole generation of people, once you've started something like that, looking up to you and saying, our hope, our future lies in whatever this person or this group of individuals are doing. Yeah. So for us as women of Liberia, at that point in time, people were looking at us, calling us and saying to us, please don't stop. You give us hope every day that there is a tomorrow.
You bet. Absolutely. It's so beautiful. It just does something to our hearts. It just wells up that power and the sense of rightness. That sounds so beautifully put and true. And then your book, here we are with your book that you're going around the world with. Okay, may I read just a little, the Kirkus Review? Searing war-torn memories from a visionary African peacekeeper and women's rights activist. Bui stands responsible for what began as a tireless vocal demonstration and soon escalated to a standoff on the presidential mansion steps demanding peace. This course of action facilitated the war's end in 2003 and the election of Africa's first female president and ended the author's personal struggles with alcohol, which I wasn't aware of. With commanding charity, Bui celebrates Liberia's 8 years of peace and continues teaching young women about the power of activism. A patriotic chronicle reverberant with valor and perseverance. So there you are. You're also the executive director of the Women, Peace, and Security Network, Africa, which is in Ghana.
Yes. So I tell people my official address is in Ghana, but I spend a lot of time in Liberia and other parts during the work that I do. So I can never boast at one point in time of sleeping in my bed in Ghana for 30 days straight. No.
Wow.
It's either 5 or 7 days. And then it's Liberia, it's somewhere else.
Wow.
But never 30 days at a stretch.
Mm. And you have six children.
I do. One of my daughters is adopted, and I have five biological children and one adopted. But I lay claim, I tell people I lay claim to eight children because I have a brother. My father had a son from another relationship I took in when he was 10. He's 23 now. I have my niece. I lost my sister in 2006.
Hmm.
So I lay claim to those other two. So I say eight kids.
They're growing up at this point in time, I assume.
Oh, yes, they're doing very well. My son, my brother is, as a matter of fact, he was the one I was on the phone with.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Ghana, and he's completing computer college there. My niece is in Ohio, and she's a junior at the Wright State University.
Wow.
My son is at the Eastern Mennonite University here in the U.S. He's studying digital imaging, something. I think I tell people I'm an African. I don't know a lot about these things, but it has a lot to do with the arts of photography and computer-driven images and all of those things. And then I have a 17-year-old who's here in New York. She has a scholarship from the Catholic school, Marymount. She's a graduating senior. Then I have the rest of them. I have a 2-year-old who just started daycare on Monday. And I don't have a Facebook page. I don't do Facebook, Twitter, because I'm not IT savvy. So she's all over her siblings' pages, and they share pictures of her going to school every day. And then my other three, the adopted one, and my 13 and 15-year-old, they all live in Ghana with me.
You're a busy woman.
Well, you can say that, but as busy as I am, I try to do what I've been called to do. And I see the work I do as a calling.
Of course. I saw a film clip on a video on the computer in which you were sitting on a board, I believe, and I think this was in 2006, but you were talking about a measure.
The UN Security Council Resolution 1325.
Exactly.
On women, peace, and security. And I think that resolution is something that drives a lot of work that women's rights activists do around the world now. The resolution was passed by the UN 2001 by the UN Security Council. So, and that resolution calls for the involvement of women every stages
right.
or in every stage of conflict, mediation, conflict negotiation, conflict transformation in communities coming out of conflict. And most of the time, our frustration as people who do the kind of work that we do is how communities or people who negotiate peace in these different conflicts tend to forget that it's not just the warmongers, those who bring the war, that are able to end the war. But even those who are affected by the wars, and 100% of the time, those affected by the wars are the women and children, specifically the women, are the ones who are able to end the wars. They have some of the answers for ending the conflict in their hands. So a lot of our advocacy now is around Resolution 1325. Because if you look at mediation efforts for global conflicts around the world, you rarely find women as mediators. So we're saying we have smart women, and so we need women to be involved. One of the theories or principles that I know is that once the whole process of negotiating the end of conflict starts, and women are left out from that initial phase, that is the beginning of the marginalization of women. Everything that has to do with post-conflict reconstruction, post-conflict development, and everything leading to the rebuilding of the nation. And then also just reinforcing the status quo of women's discrimination against women and, all of those former culture of violence and not involving women. So we advocate for from the get-go, by the time communities start talking about we need to end this war, that first question of how do we end the war, as you're engaging with the fighters, as you're engaging with the warlords, let the women be involved in the conversation.
Absolutely, and they still aren't. Isn't that
no.
true?
Even after the UN kind of like instituted or passed this resolution, the first ever resolution clearly stating women's involvement in peace and security issue, we're still having that struggle to deal, which is really ironical.
Well, I guess it really shows how little the men who are running it care about including women. And in fact, if they can get by without it, they do. You know, I was speaking with someone from Madre regarding Haiti and trying to put that back together, and the violence against women continues, and they don't include women and that was
never. It's like, you know, everyone will be doing something and say, oh, we have to do this. And once it comes to women's issues, then they have a serious case of amnesia.
Yeah, they do. So that's, how can we, that's the question. How to overcome
that? Well, the question or the thing now is sustain advocacy on the roles, the needs, priorities, and concerns of women during and after conflict. That's one. Huh. Two, going back to my former point, we need to step up.
Yep.
Because there was a report done by Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, who's now president of Liberia, and Elizabeth Wren, and the report is called Women, War, and Peace. And this report was done as a result of the early conflicts in the 90s, the civil wars that were happening in different countries. But there was a quote from those two women. They said, during conflict, the impact of the wars on women is a reflection of the interactions during peacetime. So in conflicts, in countries where you have issues of rape and abuse during conflict, go back to those countries and check the history of the interaction of men and women in peacetime, and check if you have statistics on issues of domestic violence. You will find a huge surge in those numbers, because if communities ignore the needs and concerns and priorities of women in peacetime, what do you think they will do when there's chaos?
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. May we all take that to heart. I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your very busy life, and I hope that your book, Mighty Be Our Powers, comes into everybody's consciousness.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And no problem, Bob.
And many blessings to you and all your work.
Amen. Thank you.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Shortly after this interview, Lema Bowie was announced as a Nobel Peace Laureate. The interview was conducted by Janie Reisner, host of Women's Voices on KZYX-FM in Philo, California, and edited for Wings by Bea Bernhausen. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. Wings thanks all our supporters, including KAOS-FM, your local radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, who for decades has promoted women's role in making peace. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.